Good afternoon, everyone. We're going to get started in just a few minutes. Okay, a couple of reminders before we get started today. The PowerPoint slides for today's webinar are posted on our webpage, nysrti.org. At the end of the presentation today, I will post a link to an evaluation. If you could please take a few minutes to complete that, we very much appreciate your feedback. Also, very excited today that we will again, our presenters will again be tweeting during the presentation. You can follow or post comments at Ellen P. Feinberg, and we'd love to see you on Twitter with us. Today's topic is Tiered 1 Foundational Instruction in R&R. We had a little adjustment in schedule last week, so our next webinar will be Monday, April 28th, and information about that and upcoming webinars is available on our webpage. Today's presenters are Virginia Bisey and Ellen Peisner-Feinberg. They are senior scientists at the Frank Porter Graham Child Development Institute at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. They co-direct a program of research on recognition and response, a model of tiered instruction linked to formative assessment that was developed and is being validated with funding from the Institute for Education Sciences at the U.S. Department of Education. In 2013, they co-edited the Handbook of Response to Intervention in Early Childhood, published by Paul H. Brooks Publishing and arguably the most comprehensive source of information available on this topic. Again, today they will present Tier 1 Foundational Instruction in R&R. They have reserved time at the end of the webinar for questions from participants, so please use the chat box on the screen to post any of your questions, and we will have time, plenty of time at the end to address those. At this point, I am very pleased to introduce our guest presenters and turn it over to them. Welcome.
Thank you, Molly, and welcome everyone to the third webinar in a series of 5 webinars on recognition and response. My name is Virginia Bisey, and I will be the primary presenter today. And with me today is my colleague, Ellen Peisner-Feinberg. And she is here and will be available to help address some of the questions that we hope we get at the end of the presentation today. But welcome, everyone. Today, as Molly already mentioned, our focus is going to be on Tier 1, which is the foundation of the recognition and response system, and thinking about what is foundational instruction. We're going to share with you our ideas and thoughts about that, that we have developed thoughtfully, carefully over the years, the last 5 or 6 years. And so we'll share our thinking about that with you, and we're anxious to hear what your thoughts are once we share this information with you. Okay, so let's go ahead and get started. These are our goals for this webinar today. The first is to really think about what is meant by foundational instruction at Tier 1. We want to make sure that we're on the same page about what we mean by that term. So we'll share with you what we mean by that. And really, it helps us understand what we mean by high quality. I think the two things are really very equivalent. We want to try to achieve the highest quality that we can in early childhood programs. And we start by thinking about what we mean by foundational instruction. So it's just another way of thinking about quality. The second goal is to consider the research evidence on language and literacy curriculum and instruction in early childhood. Previously, in our first webinar in this series, we shared with you the research evidence on response to intervention, or TI, very broadly in K through 12, and shared that there was very little evidence, direct evidence, with respect to RTI in early childhood. But today we're going to consider the evidence, the research evidence, the direct research evidence that we do have available to us on the best way to think about providing instruction to young children in the area of language and literacy. So we'll share some of that literature with you because it has very much informed our thinking about the foundation of a recognition response model. And then finally, we want to share with you the key features of an important instructional approach called dialogic reading, which we see as one of the key foundational practices at our disposal in early childhood. So I think those are the goals for today. As we talk to teachers around the country in different types of early childhood programs, school-based programs and community-based child care, Head Start, preschool programs, we have found that most teachers, almost all teachers that we talk to, want to know the best way that they can organize instruction to meet the needs of every single child in their classroom. Most teachers are very interested in learning about any approach that would help them do a better job of addressing children's individual needs. So that is what we hope that we can provide through a model like recognition and response. This slide shows some of the questions that teachers have posed to us, and I think these really capture their interest in trying to create a system of supports that addresses the needs of every child in the classroom. Children with who are enrolled in special education programs, children who do not need special education but perhaps are showing some signs that they might need additional supports, and children who might actually be advanced or even gifted in some ways. Children at very different levels, but these are the questions that we have heard. Which children need additional instructional supports? They really want to, teachers often have a sense of which children need additional instructional supports, but I think there is a sense and a need for a more systematic way to identify those children and to make sure that the children who need those instructional supports are actually the ones that get them. And then what teaching strategies work best to promote their language and literacy skills? What do we know through research? What are the cutting-edge curricula and strategies that we know about that would help teachers really address children's language and literacy skill needs? Another question is, well, once you figure out which children need additional supports in that area, is it better to work with these children one-on-one or in small groups? Are there other approaches that teachers should be considering as they try to address the needs of these children? And then finally, how often should targeted instruction occur? Should it happen daily, weekly? Should it happen multiple times throughout the day? And what resources are available to help teachers address these needs of children who need additional supports to learn these skills? Okay? So we think that recognition and response is a model that attempts to address teachers' questions and their desire to meet the needs of all children in their classroom. It offers a framework for assessment and tiered instruction to address varying skill levels, and that's exactly what teachers find in their classrooms. When children start the four-year-old level of preschool, that four-year-old level, their children come to teachers with varying skill levels. They're not all at the same place in terms of what they know about letters and phonological awareness and so forth. So children come to school with different levels of skills. So we need a framework that will allow for these varying skill levels. Also, recognition and response has a dual focus on improving instructional quality for all students and providing targeted interventions for some to ensure that all students succeed. So I think that what we'll find, and we're going to look at the research in a minute, but many language and literacy curricula and interventions focus on classroom-wide interventions, but they may not offer specific strategies for differentiated instruction. RTI, on the other hand, and we shared information about RTI in the first webinar in the overview, RTI really kind of immediately goes to those targeted interventions and focuses more on how to address the needs of children who may be at risk for learning difficulties or already are exhibiting some signs of learning difficulties. So I think what we're trying to do is draw from the research knowledge in both of these areas, both language and literacy in early childhood as well as response to intervention in K-12, to come up with a system that will do both things, address the needs of all students as well as provide targeted interventions for some who need them. So before we talk more specifically about Tier 1, let's just review what we've already talked about in the last two webinar presentations. Recognition and response consists of three major components. The recognition component, which is formative child assessment, both for the purposes of universal screening as well as progress monitoring. And last week, the webinar presentation went in depth in the area of recognition. The response component is the second key component, and that is both core instruction for all children and tiered interventions for some children. And then the third and final component is collaborative problem solving, and that's the process for supporting database decision making and implementation. And again, this is just a review of the model, the notion that we start with the foundation of the program would be what needs to be in place for all children, the core curriculum and intentional teaching, and some system for gathering information on all children to ensure that the curriculum goals are being met, and we call that formative assessment. Layering on top of that, we have Tier 2, which is really designed to meet the needs of some children who demonstrate through formative assessment that they need some additional supports that are delivered through small group interventions and embedded learning activities. And then finally, on top of that, we layer Tier 3, designed to meet the needs of a few children through individualized scaffolding strategies primarily. And you see formative assessment is a part of all three of those tiers, and the whole system is surrounded by the collaborative problem-solving process to support implementation of the model and database decision-making. Okay, so that's just a quick and dirty review of the model itself. So let's kind of shift our thinking and consider what practices define the response component. At Tier 1, the response component consists of the core curriculum, intentional teaching, and dialogic reading for all children. So those pieces are meant to address the needs of every single child in the classroom, and for that reason, we refer to this as foundational instruction. At Tier 2, we talk about the response component as consisting primarily of small group lessons for some children, and this can be augmented by embedded learning in the classroom, and these are activities that reinforce the skills that children learn in small group lessons, okay? And they can be embedded throughout the curriculum, throughout the day, throughout routines in the classroom, interest centers, and so forth. And then Tier 3, we define the response component as consisting of scaffolding strategies for a few children. And these are strategies that have been developed and validated for use primarily within special education, but we have incorporated them into the recognition and response system. And they consist of response prompting and modeling and peer supports with corrective feedback. We will be talking today about Tier 1, and the next webinar presentation will focus on Tiers 2 and 3. I wanted to mention an important point about how the tiers are designed to work. We always talk about the tiers as being additive, and let me share what I mean by that. All children receive Tier 1. Some children received Tiers 1 and 2, and a few received Tiers 1, 2, and 3. Okay. So you can see from this slide that we don't mean, when we talk about tiers, we don't use it to label children. We don't talk about children as being Tier 2 children or Tier 3 children or Tier 1 children. Instead, it's an organizing structure to help teachers and other adults think about how to organize the instructional supports that they offer children by level of intensity. Okay? So think of it as additive. The tiers are additive, with everybody getting Tier 1 and then some children getting one or more of the additional tiers. Well, let's take a closer look at Tier 1. What is the Tier 1 response? I've already mentioned that we consider it to include the core curriculum, intentional teaching, and dialogic reading. And I'll share why we think that in a minute, and it's because of the research. So what is the research on language and literacy instruction in early childhood? And I'm going to share with you now the current research. And I'm going to summarize that for you because there's quite a bit of it, but we're going to try to boil that down to some key nuggets. Okay, so we're going to start with the content areas that we really need to think about in the area of language and literacy. I think in order to think about what interventions or instructional approaches we should use in early childhood, we should start by really backing up a bit and thinking more about the content of our instruction. And we want to know which skills are most important to focus on for this age group. And we're really talking about 3 to 5 year olds, but primarily that year, that pre-kindergarten year, just before children enter kindergarten. And the National Research Council in 2008 identified vocabulary, phonological awareness, and letter knowledge as key language and literacy skills in pre-K. That in 2008, in addition to that, there was a report by the National Early Literacy Panel, or NELP, that found that the strongest and most consistent predictors of later literacy achievement for pre-K children were alphabet knowledge or letter knowledge, phonological awareness, rapid automatic naming of letters and objects, and writing letters. So I think the field has really settled on these three areas as being the key predictors of children's later literacy achievement and the most things to focus on when they're in pre-kindergarten. So it's easy to remember. It's vocabulary, PA or phonological awareness, and letter knowledge. In addition, many of the studies that were evaluated through a meta-analysis by the NELP panel, many of those studies with strong effects involved small group instruction. So just kind of hold that thought in the back of your mind for a minute, that the importance of small group instruction in helping children address these three content areas. So based on these results, the recognition and response model has incorporated, the notion of using, first of all, of thinking about small group instruction as being really important. And I think I got ahead of myself on that. And let me back up a little bit and talk about the three types of interventions that have been evaluated through research. And I'll come back to that that small group idea in just a minute. So essentially, when we've looked at the research evidence in the area of language and literacy, we have found that there are these three broad categories of interventions. One focuses on instructional practices. One focuses on curricula. And the third focuses on multi-component instructional systems. Okay, I'm going to say a bit more about each of those. Okay. Remember, that first one was instructional approaches. So I'm going to start with that one. So I'm going to talk about the NELP report again, because in addition to identifying which skills we should focus on, the NELP report also talked about which instructional strategies were found to be most effective. They found that there were three approaches that were represented in many early childhood curricula and instruction that had positive effects on children's language and literacy development in the pre-K period. The first is code-oriented instruction that targeted children's phonological awareness and alphabet knowledge. Okay. The second was shared storybook reading, emphasizing language development. And the third was oral language instruction that targeted vocabulary and sentence structure. Okay, and this is where the small group idea comes in, because many of these studies that the NELP evaluated found, many of these studies that had strong effects involved small group instruction. So that's the idea I want you to take away from this slide, not the previous slide. So then, based on these results, recognition and response has incorporated the notion of small group instruction as an important element in the response component. And we'll say more about small group instruction in a minute. The major source of evidence on the effectiveness of early childhood curriculum and instruction is the What Works Clearinghouse. And the official sponsor of that is the Institute of Education Science at the U.S. Department of Education. So this is a major source of evidence. It's also a very key resource for anyone who wants to find out which curricula have been found to be effective, which ones work and which ones don't work for pre-kindergarten children. And you can find curricula focused just on language and literacy here, as well as curricula that focus on other domains of learning or comprehensive core curricula. So it is a great source of information to identify a curriculum and really go and see, based on research evidence, how effective a particular curriculum is. Okay, let me share with you just a couple of other ideas about curriculum. Before I do that, though, I'm going to just mention that there has been research on dialogic reading, which is a particular type of storybook reading, and that research has been evaluated by the What Works Clearinghouse, and they found, based on their evaluation, strong positive effects of dialogic reading on oral language, but no discernible effects on other skills. So essentially, this is a really positive. It's a very, it's one of the best practices that we can use in early childhood to strengthen children's vocabulary skills and their oral language development. And it's a very simple approach to learn and to use. And we have found it's not one that is widely familiar to people in the field, even though it's got a lot of evidence showing that it's effective. It's also not something that is widely taught in academic training programs. So we like to sort of incorporate it into our model as a foundational practice and include it in terms of helping teachers understand what they should be implementing at Tier 1. And I will say more about dialogic reading in a minute. But first, let me share with you what we mean by curriculum. I don't know if you've tried to find a definition of curriculum, but it's difficult to find one curriculum a definition that everyone shares. But I'll share one with you that we have used. It's just a simple one, but I think it might be helpful. We think of curriculum as a set of explicit written directions to guide instruction. So that's one way to just simply think about it, as it's explicit and it's written and it really helps guide instruction. And most curricula have these three elements, and Many include other elements as well, but these are three very important ones. One, you need to know what goals are being addressed through the curriculum. You know, is it, as I said earlier, some of them can focus just on one domain of learning, like language and literacy or mathematics or social emotional development, whereas others are more comprehensive and really try to address all domains of learning. And I think an example of that might be creative curriculum. That's more comprehensive or high scope. And then you have other curricula that really just focus on a single domain. A second key feature of curriculum is that there is a scope and sequence of the skills. And so sometimes they have charts in the back or the front, and sometimes they don't, but you can get a sense of what is supposed to be taught when. And we call that scope and sequence, very important part of a curriculum. And then finally, there's a specified set of materials that are needed for implementation. Sometimes those are teacher-made. Sometimes there are expensive kits that you have to purchase. But usually there is some specification around what materials you need to use to implement a curriculum. So I want to just share with you some examples of curricula that have been evaluated by the What Works Clearinghouse. Based on information available from the What Works Clearinghouse, this was through July of 2013. There may be some changes since then, but based on our most recent review, there were 6 curricula that specifically focused on language and or literacy in pre-K that met the standards for review. And of these, 2 demonstrated positive effects on oral language, print knowledge, and phonological processing. Now, those were Literacy Express and Doors to Discovery. One curriculum had potentially positive effects on oral language and print knowledge, and that was called Head Sprout Early Reading. One had mixed effects on print knowledge. That was Let's Begin with the Letter People. And 2 had no discernible positive effects on language and literacy skills. And those were Bright Beginnings and Ladders to Literacy. So I'm just sharing examples of the kind of information you can find, because it's a very important resource if you're at the point of considering which curriculum to pick. Or oftentimes it's not one teacher that picks a curriculum. It may be an entire school district or state. This is a resource to help in that decision. It can help you decide whether or not to choose a particular curriculum once you consider the evidence of effectiveness for a particular population. And as I said, all of these are curricula designed for use in pre-K. So, in accordance with these findings, the recognition and response model incorporates research-based language and literacy curricula as part of the comprehensive instructional system, both at tiers 1 and 2. We think about using a research-based curriculum, along with the other components of the system, including formative assessment and collaborative problem solving. So what I'm trying to do here, just to kind of share with you where I'm going, is I'm sharing with you the research, and then I'm also sharing how that has influenced the development of recognition response. Another important source of evidence that is often cited by scholars in early childhood is the PCER study, and that stands for Preschool Curriculum Evaluation Research Study, also conducted in 2008. There was an awful lot of research published in 2008 for some reason about instruction in the area of language and literacy. This was a very important study. At the time, it evaluated 14 different curricular interventions, pretty much everything that was out there. It found only one of the interventions had positive effects in both pre-K and kindergarten on language and literacy skills. And it was a combined curriculum. They used both DLM and Open Court, and now Open Court is called Imagine It. It is an available curriculum. I think both of them are. But it does show you that, I mean, it shows us as a field that we have pretty limited evidence of effectiveness on the curricula that are available to us at this time. And I think it is a sobering idea that with all of this research, we have only a handful of early childhood curricula in the area of language and literacy that we can say are evidence-based. So I'll let you just ponder that for a moment. Maybe there'll be some questions about that at the end. And I would just note, too, that the PCR study, like all study, had methodological limitations, but it's still a widely used and cited source of information on this topic. Okay, and now we're going to talk about the third type of intervention, and that is multi-component systems. Okay, and by multi-component systems, we mean interventions that have more than one component. So, for example, a curriculum is considered just one component, but multi-component systems would have a curriculum, they might have an assessment component, they might have a professional development component, and so forth. So these are all examples of multi-component systems that have been developed and evaluated through research. Examples of widely known multi-component language and literacy interventions targeting pre-K children include the Head Start Ready program, and that stands for Research-Based Developmentally Informed. My Teaching Partner, okay. EPIC, which stands for Evidence-Based Program for Integrated Curricula, and TEAM, the Texas Early Education Model. We have provided some the citations here and the references at the end of this presentation if anyone is interested in actually trying to dig a little deeper and read about the research behind each of these programs. We've provided the references so you can do that. But I will tell you that in the next slide, just kind of what we found. This is what we learned based on, you know, our looking at the research and what the key findings are, and that is almost all of the interventions showed positive effects on language and literacy skills of children. And some found positive effects for teaching practices. Okay, so that's good. I think that we're onto something here. Multi-component kinds of interventions seem to be more powerful than single-component interventions for achieving positive effects for young children. Okay, so that's a good thing. Again, there were methodological limitations that we won't go into detail here, but there are some weaknesses in terms of research design. But here's another key point about the research. All of these multi-component systems were missing some of the key elements, or those key elements were not fully defined. So, for example, they weren't consistent, for example. Some of them were missing the whole formative assessment piece, so that you could really link the results to instructional decision-making. That was missing in, I would say, the majority of those. All of them had a focus on class-wide instruction versus tiered instruction. So they were all developed for a general population of young children. They had positive effects broadly on young children, but they all lacked targeted interventions for children who needed those supports to learn the key skills. So, based on all of this research, the research on instructional approaches, the research on curricula, and the research on multi-component systems, based on all of it, we have taken this information and incorporated the findings into the development of recognition response. So because what we perceive to be as weaknesses in some of the other approaches, we've tried to address those weaknesses in the model, and this is how we've done that. First of all, the model specifies that a research-based curriculum be used, both at the foundational level, Tier 1, as well as for small group instruction at Tier 2 to address language and literacy skills. Second, dialogic reading, which is a very powerful intervention for improving children's oral language development and vocabulary skills, because it is not always reflected in curricula, even language and literacy curriculum. We've looked at them, and the steps or the features of dialogic reading are not always represented there. We have decided to incorporate dialogic reading because it's so powerful at Tier 1. We've also incorporated the notion of small group instruction because in so many studies where there were positive effects, small group instruction was a feature of the intervention. So that's a part of the model. And finally, our system includes what we consider to be all of the key elements of a multi-component instructional system, the formative assessment piece, the tiered instruction, and collaborative problem solving. Okay, but how does this work in a classroom? So we're going to move away from the world of research. Even though I could talk about research all day, I'm sure many of you want to get more practical. Let's get real. You know, how is this going to work in a typical pre-K classroom or early childhood setting? Well, let's go back to Marissa. Remember, Marissa was introduced to you last week, I believe, by Ellen. And when she talked about the formative assessment component, the response component, the recognition component, I mean. And I think in Ellen's presentation, Marissa was really contemplating how she could use assessment, you know, how she would use assessment to figure out which children needed targeted interventions. And Ellen worked through that example to talk about and actually share with you how she could use a distribution of scores based on formative assessment to make decisions about which children might need Tier 2 instruction. And then another example to say, well, after they get one round of Tier 2 intervention, how would I know if they continue to need that or if there are other children who need Tier 2 or if some children might need Tier 3? So today we want to sort of think about Marissa's classroom again, but in a different context. We want to think now about how she would think about the response component, not the recognition component, but the response component. What would she do if she were implementing recognition response? Well, first of all, she would continue using the core curriculum that was already in place in her program or her classroom. For example, if she were using the creative curriculum and she was also adopting recognition and response, She wouldn't throw creative curriculum out the window. She would continue to use creative curriculum. So that's one important idea right there, because creative curriculum, it's already been determined by her program that that is the curriculum that will be used classroom-wide, and it addresses all key domains of learning. Okay, so that's one thing that Marissa would do. Secondly, she would make some necessary adjustments to ensure that there were ample opportunities throughout the curriculum for every child to learn language and literacy skills. For example, this is just one example of the kind of adjustments that she might need to make. If Marissa wasn't fully implementing the creative curriculum, maybe she was just implementing parts of it or not implementing it at all, she would really have to, you know, make that adjustment and either begin to implement it or to implement it fully if she were going to implement recognition response. Another adjustment might be to think about whether or not the interest centers in her classroom and the learning activities that she was providing for children really addressed key language and literacy skills and reinforced them throughout the day, throughout daily routines and activities, throughout the curriculum. If not, she probably wants to think about making those enhancements to her classroom before she starts trying to implement a tiered approach. And then finally, she would, if she isn't already doing it, she would adopt a dialogic reading approach as a foundational practice for all children. And she would incorporate that into her read-aloud activities anytime she's doing whole group storybook reading or anytime she's reading to a small groups of children. She would employ a dialogic reading approach. Okay, so I said that I would say more about dialogic reading, and I think now is the time to do that. So we're going to delve a little deeper into the topic of dialogic reading. Okay, and to do that, I'm going to share with you a video that is available on the What Works Clearinghouse, Doing What Works. Dr. Chris Lonergan will give you an introduction to dialogic reading now.
And the teacher is just reading the book and the children are listening. In dialogic reading, what happens is that the typical role between the adult and the child, or the teacher and the children, is shifted. So rather than just the children being passive listeners to the story, the teacher or the adult is having the children help tell part of the story. And the teacher or the adult facilitates that by having the children answer some questions or provide additional expansions on things they've heard or maybe even remembering other things they did that actually relate to the story. So one is dialogic reading is interactive in the sense that the teacher is having a dialogue with children about the story or using the book as a way to have the dialogue. Whereas in regular shared reading, the teacher is just reading and the children are listening. So it's a very passive kind of receptive model of the book. Now there's another type of shared reading, which some people call interactive shared reading, where teachers may occasionally ask questions of children about the story they're reading, but it's not as organized, it's not as systematic as it would be in dialogic reading. And the focus of dialogic reading is really less about the book, and it's really more about having the language interactions around the book. Unlike the typical shared reading where you may be reading a book.
Okay. You just heard from Dr. Chris Lonergan, who is one of the leading experts in this area, has conducted quite a bit of research on dialogic reading, really kind of give you an orientation to it. I think many people, when they hear the explanation, are familiar with it, but you know, sometimes aren't aware that there are very specific strategies that are intended to be used with this approach. So I'm just going to kind of reinforce a couple of points. One is just the definition of dialogic reading, that it is a specific type of interactive reading that relies on a particular set of strategies that are called the peer and the crowd, and that those are designed to create conversations with children and help them take an active role in storytelling. And I'll just tell you just a funny story about my sister, who is a grandmother and was telling me that she has a difficult time reading a story to her youngest grandchild because her granddaughter wants to tell the story to her and won't let her read the story. And, you know, I just found that amusing and shared with her that that's actually probably the way it should be working if you want to take a dialogic reading approach. So here it's just a reminder on this slide of what we mean by the peer in the crowd. Peer stands for prompts, evaluates, expands, and repeats the prompts. And as an example of that, if you were reading to a young child or to a group of children a book about fire trucks, an adult might point to a picture and say, "What's that?" And the "what's that" is the prompt. And the child might say, "That's a fire truck." And then the adult would say, "That's right, it's a big red fire truck." And so you see that the adult has evaluated the response and expanded on it by using the words "big" and "red," and then would end that sequence by saying, "What's that again?" or "What's that?" And the child would say, hopefully would say something like, "It's a big red fire truck," or "a big fire truck." And what you're seeing in that example and in that sequence is language development happening before your eyes, because children are learning new vocabulary and using it in the context of storybook reading. So that's what we mean by the peer. It's the sequence of how to prompt and reinforce what children are learning. And the crowd stands for the different kinds of prompts that you can use during that process, during that sequence. C standing for completion prompts. This is a big red, and then you stop and wait for the child to fill in the blank. That's a completion prompt. A recall prompt is where you ask a child to think about something that has occurred and to recall it. What did the bird ask his friend? Is a recall kind of prompt. Open-ended, tell me about what's happening in this picture, is an open-ended prompt. And then the WH prompts are the what, when, where, why, and I would throw in how, questions that teachers and adults ask. And finally, that distancing prompt is really powerful because it, as Dr. Lonergan just mentioned, it helps connect what's happening in a story to a child's life. And so you could use a distancing prompt if you say something like, "Do you remember when we saw a fire truck? What can you tell me about that?" So you're just making a connection between the story and what has happened in the child's life. These are just some simple reminders about kind of some other important reminders about dialogic reading before reading. Often we introduce the title or the author, and the author asks a question to create interest in the book. During reading, we use the crowd prompts and the peer sequence that I just mentioned. And then after reading, we ask questions to help children recall the story and make connections to their lives. Okay. I'll just mention that when we work with teachers on dialogic reading, we often suggest that they use sticky notes to plan their prompts in advance and to write them on sticky notes and place them in the book where they're designed to be used. And that just is a little trick that helps. And sometimes teachers use them all the time, children get used to them, but they do it in a very, I think, in a way that doesn't draw attention to those little sticky notes, but it's very effective in helping them use a variety of different prompts. Otherwise, if you don't plan this in advance, you may end up seeing a teacher use one particular type of prompt over and over again, as opposed to relying on the different types of prompts and thinking about kind of a developmental sequence of how to use prompts. Okay, we have a quick demonstration of dialogic reading that we're going to share with you. And I think we're not going to show all of this, Molly, maybe just a little bit of it because we appear to be kind of running out of time. So we'll just give you a little feel for this. I'll just mention that you're going to see some of what we talked about. You may not see, everything in terms of the entire peer sequence here. Okay, I think what we ended up seeing was just really the very first phase of dialogic reading, which was helping children get interested. So we didn't really, but you saw already just her style was very interactive in terms of engaging children by asking questions and allowing them time to respond and to have conversations. So we're going to stop it because of time, but if you're interested in seeing a full video, I'm going to share with you the resource for where you can do that right now. And that is the Connect Module 6 on Dialogic Reading. Connect is a resource, a free online resource. It includes modules on various topics in early childhood, focused on different research-based instructional practices, with Module 6 focused on dialogic reading. And in this module, you'll be able to see other examples of dialogic reading that really take you all through the entire book. Included in the Connect resources are other things such as this research summary on dialogic reading by the What Works Clearinghouse. So if you want just a quick summary of that, you can find that at the on the Connect module website. Here is a crowd strategy planning sheet if you want to do some planning around how to use your crowd prompts. Dialogic reading observation form. And so those are just some resources I wanted to share with you. So let's review what we talked about today. We discussed what is meant by foundational instruction as part of R&R. We reviewed research on language and literacy instruction in early childhood. And we looked more closely at the response component of recognition response. We also identified the key practices that define dialogic reading. Next time, we'll talk about children who don't make progress at Tier 1 and what happens. How do we address the needs of children who don't make progress at Tier 1? And we'll focus on the response component at Tiers 2 and 3. And here are the references that we have provided. If you'd like to learn more about any of the sources that we have cited in this presentation, and here's information on our website. So at this time, we have about 15 minutes left for your questions, and I'm scrolling through the comments that have come in, and I'm sorry to say that some people have had a difficult time hearing again. I'm not sure what we can do. I'm speaking as loud as I can into the phone, so I'm thinking it's more of a technical issue, but we apologize for those technical issues. I do see a question here, and go ahead. I'm going to encourage you, if you've been listening in and you've got questions or comments, go ahead and type them in, because we really do want to hear from you. But here's a question. What is the effectiveness of the pre-K Houghton Mifflin curriculum in regards to language and literacy? I am not familiar with that one. I'm looking at Ellen. She's shaking her head no. So we are not familiar with it, and I don't think it's one that's been evaluated on the What Works Clearinghouse, so we're not going to be able to address that one. I would encourage you to go ahead and look, search for that on the What Works Clearinghouse site and see if you can find it. You can also, sometimes you can look at the front of the book and they will talk about any evaluation research that's been conducted. You can just try Googling it as well. But we're not familiar with the research evidence on that particular one. Sorry. Then there is a question about the Connect module. The question is, where can you find that information? Those are web-based resources that you can find on the Internet. Just type in Connect modules in your search engine, and it'll come right up. And then once you get there, you will see that there are 7 different topics. One of them is tiered instruction. Module 7 is tiered instruction. Recognition and response is mentioned in that module, along with other tiered models of instruction, such as the pyramid model. So go ahead and Google that. I think you'll find a wealth of resources, both in terms of video demonstrations, summaries of research evidence, descriptions and definitions of practices, policy statements, and so forth. So I really encourage you to take a look at the Connect modules. They were developed for professional development, and they were meant to be used by instructors and faculty and professional development providers, but practitioners can use them as well as a source of information. So I hope you find them useful. Yes, this is someone is asking about wanting to watch the videos again to hear more about the reading style, the dialogic reading. And I will say we didn't really get into, the full, I'd like you to see the full illustration of what this looks like, when you start reading the book and during reading, before reading, during reading, and after reading is kind of how we divide it in terms of in dialogic reading in that approach. And so I would encourage you to go to the Connect modules, and there you can find a full example to show you what it looks like. So you can actually see teachers using those prompts and using the sticky notes to try to use different kinds of prompts with children throughout the storybook reading. So I hope that that will be helpful to you. I'm sorry we didn't have enough time to actually share an entire example with you. And as I said, people, we have found that many teachers, even though they're doing a good job of engaging children during storybook reading, they sometimes complain that some children wander off, either in terms of their interest or sometimes physically wander off. And after they learn dialogic reading practices, they are just amazed at how it can change a storybook reading activity and help children become more engaged and the learning that occurs in terms of oral language development. So I can't say enough about the practice in terms of how easy it is to learn and how effective it is. Here's a question or a comment that we didn't really mention anything or about whether or not worksheets should be used in early childhood education and pre-K. This commenter says, I feel some pressure to use dittos and worksheets to get students ready for the rigors of kindergarten. Oh, dear. I have very strong opinions about that. I think Ellen shares them. We're very much about developmentally appropriate practice in early childhood education and pre-K. We believe that it is appropriate to address language and literacy goals in pre-K, but that you can do that in a very developmentally appropriate way. And we don't have to rely on an approach that may be more appropriate for an older student or may not be. I'm not sure, dittos and worksheets and flashcards are always the most appropriate for kindergarten or first grade students either. But certainly we would not encourage them to be used in early childhood. So our small group instructional activities, the lessons themselves, look like children are engaged in just fun activities. They're game-like. They are children don't have to raise their hand or use worksheets. They are listening to stories and engaging in stories and using dialogic reading practices and so forth. So we'll weigh in very strongly against worksheets to accomplish any of these goals in pre-K. Let's see. Are there any requirements specific to each state that would be addressed in the Connect modules? No. I think what is addressed are learning standards. National standards are referenced, but they don't talk, I don't believe that they are state specific. And that's because the resources were designed to be used more broadly by the entire nation. So not for any particular state, but I think it would be easy for any one person to take the modules and look at how the modules relate to any particular set of state standards. And I'm guessing that they would relate pretty well. Again, those modules were developed on the basis of research evidence. That's the starting point for both identifying which practices are addressed, how they're defined, used, and so forth. We really drew heavily from research to figure all that out. What are our thoughts about dialogic reading in the context of addressing the Common Core State Standards? Well, as you know, there are no Common Core State Standards specific to pre-K. So the best we can do is to look at the standards as they relate to kindergarten and higher. And so, unfortunately, we're left in a situation in pre-K of not having those Common Core standards to draw from for age four. We can only think about how they somebody's saying New York does have them for pre-K. Okay. But, I mean, nationally, what makes them Common Core is that they're national standards, right? So my understanding is that at this time we don't have national Common Core standards. So it may be that, you know, New York State has developed a set of standards for pre-K that are part of your Common Core. So I have to say that we're not that familiar with New York's standards. But based on what I know about the research, and I'm guessing New York State must have taken a look at that, that they're probably pretty closely aligned because, you know, we are drawing from, you know, the best available research evidence in the area of language and literacy. So, but I would love to hear from you in terms of your thoughts about how well aligned you think this is. I think we've addressed all of the questions that are there. If somebody else has a question, you still have a few minutes. Looks like a couple of people are typing away. Oh. Okay. Well, looks like we're winding down and getting ready to end this session. Thank you for your attention. And we look forward to seeing you next time. I hope that you will join us when we focus more on what happens at tiers 2 and 3 for children who need additional supports and how all of that relates to foundational instruction at tier 1. Thank you again for your attention and your interest, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.